don't know what I can add to it. Maybe something. We'll see. A show that I like to watch on TV, it's on the Discovery Channel. It's called something about engineering, extreme engineering. And the host is this really geeky but very passionate guy who goes from site to site and is looking for what the world is doing with amazing feats of engineering that we would dare to undertake. And some of them are awfully impressive. And there's one thing that I've learned from watching it, and that is, if you're going to build a really big structure, you better have a good foundation. If you don't have a foundation for it, it's going to crumble. And I wanted to use kind of as a memory device this morning the idea of a building with a foundation that we're going to build this morning. And so we're going to be talking in 1 John chapter 2, verses 9 through 11. And I want to tell you ahead of time what the parts of the building are so that you can look for them in the text, okay? So the foundation of the building is our love for God. We're going to start there. If our love for God is deep and strong, then it will be able to support the structure that's above it. And the structure that we're going to be building above it is the building would represent our love for each other. Okay, and the building has all kinds of rooms in it and I don't know, floors and elevators and bathrooms and whatever. The building is a building. Each room represents a relationship that you have with someone else, a love relationship. Okay? So we've got this building that we're going to build out of relationships. Its foundation is our love for God. There's three things that go into the building. When you build a building, you got to put the right parts in it, otherwise it won't stay together. And there's three components that we're going to look at this morning that go into that building. So we start with the foundation, and then we have some building blocks. And the building blocks are, and this one's obvious, but Mark just brought it up again, don't hate. You would think, of course, it's obvious that we not do that. But we're going to have to talk about that for a little bit. Don't hate. The second one is love in action, not just words. Don't hate, love in action. The third one is depend on God. These are the building blocks that we'll use to build this building of love for each other. Okay? Don't hate, love in action, and depend on God. So let's look together at the verses. 1 John chapter 2, verse 9 through 11. Oh, and there's one more thing. The third thing. It's sort of a benefit or a reward or a bonus at the end. John often includes these things. If we do it right, here's what happens. And so the third thing that comes out of if we do it right is we will be able to see clearly. And it's a spiritual kind of sight. We'll be able to see clearly so that we can avoid traps, problems in the future. So that's sort of the reward that comes out. We got the foundation, we got the building blocks, and we got the result, which is to be able to see clearly. So let's read it together. Verse 9, the one who says he's in the light and yet hates his brother is in the darkness until now. The one who loves his brother abides in the light, and there is no cause for stumbling in him. But the one who hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness and does not know where he is going because the darkness has blinded his eyes. Before we can talk about these verses, we have to go back just a little bit to verses 7 and 8. Because verses 7 and 8 lay the foundation. What John's talking about in 9 through 11 is the structure itself, the building. The foundation comes before that. And we talked about that. We're continuing through John. We've started a long time back, and I'll talk about it probably for 5 years at this pace. But we'll go ahead and talk through John, okay? And in our last study, we did look at verses 7 and 8, but I want to look a little closer at it because it's the foundation of our love for God that we can build this building on. So let's go back and read those as well. Verse 7 says, "Beloved, I'm not writing a new commandment to you, but an old commandment which you have had from the beginning. The old commandment is the word which you have heard. On the other hand, I am writing a new commandment to you, which is true in him and in you, because the darkness is passing away and the light is already shining." When we talked about this, it's kind of like a riddle that John's writing. Something that's old and new and in him and in you. It even rhymes. What's old and new and in him and in you? It reminded me of the 60s television show Batman with Adam West, like the original one. I wasn't alive in the 60s, by the way, just so you know. But I did see those shows. And whenever he interacted with the Riddler, he would get a letter. And it would say something like this: what's old and new and in him and in you? And he would be perplexed and have to think about it for a while. And that's when, you know, Robin would say, holy butterflies, Batman. How are we going to figure this out in time, right? If you didn't see it, you don't get that. But anyway, he always made up these weird things that, anyway. So we have to figure out the clue. What is old and new and in him and in you? And I have the answer. I'm Batman today. The answer is love. And I'm going to show you how that is. If you look at the first thing is this old commandment. What is the old commandment? Well, there's two. And the first one comes from Deuteronomy chapter 6. And it says, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and might. Okay? Now, when Matthew recounted Jesus' teaching on that, he included heart, soul, and mind. And Mark said heart, soul, mind, and strength. And Luke said heart, soul, strength, and mind. So there's three or four aspects of this love that we have for God. All of them add up to loving God with everything you've got. Okay, and the second command is in Leviticus 19, and it says, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Those two commands together are what John's referring to. Those are the old. Now, how are those new? I think we talked about this last time, but there's two Greek words for new. One of them means new in time, and one of them means new in quality. This one means new in quality, okay, the new command. So how can something be both old and new at the same time? Well, I have an example for any of you engineer-type physicists. In industry, if we have something that's an old technology that has a new application, that's what this is like. It's something that is new because we haven't seen it before, but the technology is not new. It's something that's been around for a long time. We just weren't smart enough to be able to see it at the start. So an old technology with a new application, that's what this is, this new. There's an old commandment, love the Lord your God and love your neighbor as yourself. It became new for us when Jesus came down and showed us how it works. We didn't understand it before until we saw him live it. And when he lived it, the old command became new. Not new in time, it's not something different, it's the same thing, but new because it's been polished off and given a new face. Okay, that's what's old and new. Now, when we became followers of Jesus, then that which was new in him also came into us. And we're able to now live in love with other people and love with God because of what Jesus brought us. So we have something that's old, that's new, that's in him, and that's in you. So the riddle is solved. It's love. Batman wins the day again. We're talking about love here, and love is the foundation. And there's two aspects of it, right? Loving God and loving others. And I'm here to tell you, you cannot love others unless you first love God. God is at the foundation. You will not have the ability inside you to love other people if you don't love God. And the deeper that you love God, the more that you love God, the more you'll be able to love other people. So the stronger your foundation is, the taller your building can be. So that's what we're looking at. That's the foundation. Okay, we had to start there. That's kind of all pre-talk here. We haven't even got to the passage. And in fact, I want to show you one more thing before we actually get to verse 9. Okay, there's those four aspects of loving God. How are you doing on those four? I want to give you kind of a measure, kind of a way to tell. Okay. And I'll do that by looking at those four. So the first one is love the Lord your God with all your heart. What does that mean? Are you doing that? Well, your heart is not just the organ inside that pumps the blue fluid through your veins. What do they mean by heart? The heart is the core of a person. What do you really like on the inside? If you get rid of all the stuff that's in the way, what do you really care about? What do you really live for? What really drives you? That's what your heart is. And so God is saying you should love the Lord your God with all the core of who you are. How are you doing in respect to that? And I'm going to give you a way to look at that. I was reading this week, and I'm going to be coughing and choking all the time up here because I've had a cold that I can't shake. But that's okay. That aside, I was reading this week in the Sermon on the Mount. And I encourage you to read that this week, just because. God views things so different than we do. When I read it, I go, He's exactly the opposite of what I would naturally think. And in Matthew 6:19, He talks about storing up treasures in heaven instead of storing up treasures on earth. And He ends that dialogue with a verse that we probably all know, "Where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." Right? The word heart appears. It's the same heart that John's talking about. And so here's a way to gauge how you're doing in terms of loving God with all your heart. Where's your money? Where do you put your money? I'm not here to talk about tithing or the matter of giving and receiving. This is something that you can answer on your own. Where do you put your money? That's a gauge to tell you how are you doing in terms of loving God with all your heart. Okay? I was at a conference this week, and I had lunch with a guy who's in the business world, kind of a mentor of mine. He's not a Christian. He doesn't understand any of this stuff, and so he can only take me so far, which ain't very far. But he is successful in what he does, so I was having lunch with him and listening to what he was saying, and he was asking me about what are my ambitions for business? How am I going to get to the next step? Do I want to get to the top of the company I'm in, or do I want to do something maybe that's a little more lucrative? He was kind of giving me some options. And he asked me about finances and how am I doing with that, and am I going to be, and I'll quote, extremely comfortable by the time I'm 50 with my finances. That's what he said. And I kind of went, I don't care. I'm happy. I'm fine. I'm not worried about that. I'll think about that later. But then it stuck in my mind, and this is my humanness coming up. And I started to think, why not think about my future? Why not have a bunch of money to sit on later? Why not put it all away and save it and be able to retire at age 50 and do whatever I want, whenever I want? Why not think about that? And I was just kind of processing. And he's continuing to talk, and he's telling me it's not very hard. He didn't start doing it till he was about 30, and I'm in my 30s. And all they did, he and his wife, was they decided to live below their means. And they saved 10%. And when he said 10%, it struck something in my mind, because I've been raised in a Baptist church, and 10% is tithe. And I can't separate the two. Whenever I hear 10%, I think tithe. And so I started to think, tithe. What if I invested my the tithe that I normally give, instead of tithing to the church, I invest that in the stock market? In 20 years, would I be able to retire then? The answer is yeah, I sure would. So I decided I'm not going to tithe anymore. Instead, I'm just going to invest in the stock market, and I'm going to be filthy rich by 55. What do you think? Good. Boo. Is that consistent with what this says? No. But it is how we think if we're not careful from time to time. It is how we think. And I got caught thinking it. Now, I wasn't actually going to do it. Hopefully you know me better than that. But I did let myself wander, maybe even a little too far down the road of thinking about that sort of thing. And then I walked back to my hotel room and I started studying this. And it just happened to be that I was right here. And I went, okay, lesson learned. There's an example in, do you love God with all your heart? Now, before we leave this, I want to make sure I say this. It's okay to save money. I'm not telling you don't save money. I'm not telling you don't put money into your 401k or your 403b or your IRAs or whatever you're putting money into. That's not what God's saying. In fact, in Matthew 25, in the parable of the talents, that's the opposite of what God teaches. He makes a good example of the servant who wisely invested his master's money. God has given us the task of being good stewards of what He's given us. And that means both the physical resources and the spiritual resources, our spiritual gifts. He's asking us to be good stewards of it. It would be unwise not to save money. What I'm saying is, don't put money into your 401k instead of putting money into the work that God's doing. Don't transfer funds from one place to put them into another in order to make yourself more comfortable. Now, maybe you all got that all solved and you didn't need to hear that, but we need to continually go back to this test of, am I giving God everything, all of my heart, which means all of my money, okay? I'm not going to go into the detail on the other three, but I do want to give you some verses to look at. So, loving the Lord your God with all your soul. Matthew 16:26 says, and you'll probably recognize this, "For what will it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? Or what could a man give in exchange for his soul?" Your soul is your very life. If I dedicate my life to a given task, I can probably get pretty far in that. I could probably do a pretty good job. I was thinking of a silly one this morning because it comes up from time to time. But if I dedicated my life to making sure that children were safe, then I might be able to pass laws before I die that guarantee that they have to wear helmets and pads before they leave a house. And anytime they're walking around, they need to wear them. I may not be able to do that universally, but I could probably do it in some communities if I dedicate my life to it. Okay? God wants us to dedicate our lives to His work. If we dedicate our lives to His work, we'll accomplish His goals. They may not be the ones that the world is trying to accomplish right now, but that's not what we're doing. We're dedicating our lives to His work. That's what loving the Lord your God with all your soul is. We'll move quicker through these here. With all your mind, Romans 12:2 says, "Be transformed by the renewing of your mind." Okay? It's talking about this book of being absorbed in your mind through study and changing you into Jesus Christ, being more like Him, being renewed in your mind. That's what God wants us to do, is renew ourselves by soaking up His Word. That's what loving the Lord your God with all your mind is. There's another verse, Colossians 3:2, which says, "Set your mind on the things above, not on the things that are on the earth." We need to be thinking in terms of what is God trying to accomplish. We have to think about things that are going on the earth because we're watching and we're seeing. But what we need to be watching for is what is God doing in the world that I'm living in so that I can be part of it. That's loving the Lord your God with all your mind. Okay, and then the last one is strength. We need to love Him with all our strength. We don't have enough strength to really be able to love God. But it's okay because He gives us the strength we need. What we really need to do is rely on Him. We need to depend on Him. Depending on God is how we love Him with all our strength. 2 Corinthians 12:2, Paul says something that I think we'll all remember as well. "When I am weak, then I am strong." And you go, well, how can that be? When you're weak, you're strong. And that's because when you run to the end of your own strength, you start to depend on God. Whether you like it or not, you're forced to. And when you depend on God, you find a well of strength that you should have just went to in the beginning because it's way more than you need. And that's the strength He wants us to love Him with. Okay, I've beat to death this love thing, but if you don't have a strong foundation, you got nothing. The building's going to crumble. So that's how you build. It's not how you build it. Those are the components to be able to test it. How do you build it? You spend time with God. You do the things you know how to do. You spend time in His Word. You spend time in prayer. You spend time in praising Him. You spend time doing His work. You know how to do that. This is just a way to gauge how you're doing at it. So, where's your money? Whose life are you living? What do you think about? And who do you depend on? And if the answers of any of those are me, you got to rethink it. If the answer to all those is God, then you're starting to build that foundation deep enough to be able to handle the structure of loving other people. Okay. Now we can talk about what John has to say here in verses 9 through 11. And it won't be near as long, so don't worry. So we go back to verse 9, and we're looking at the three building blocks now. Don't hate, love in action, and depend on God. Verse 9. "The one who says he's in the light and yet hates his brother is in the darkness until now." The one who says he's in the light. The phrase "in the light" should remind us, and I've been in this a lot more than you have over the last couple of months, but "in the light" comes in chapter 1, verse 7, where John is talking about in the light. And when he was there, and when we studied it, we talked about a couple of characteristics of people who are counterfeit Christians versus the characteristics of people who are Christians, who are children of God. And the counterfeit people, they do two things. They walk in the darkness, and they deny their sin. But the Christians, by contrast, walk in the light and confess their sin. Okay, you remember this vaguely at all? In chapter 2, verse 3, John adds a third characteristic to the children of God. they keep His commandments. Okay? So they walk in the light, they confess their sin, and they keep His commandments, which we now know means they love the Lord their God with all their heart, mind, soul, and strength, and they love their neighbor as themselves. That's what they should do. And when we read the one who says he's in the light, we would expect this person to follow those things, to walk in the light, to confess his sin, and to love the Lord as God and his neighbor. But what do we find? He, and yet, hates his brother. And he's in the darkness until now. The word hate is what we really need to look at. John paints a picture here where he makes a contrast between light and darkness. And he compares that to love and hate. And I think it's a really important thing to see because I think it might change your mind about the word hate. Light and darkness are completely different from each other. In fact, one cannot exist in the presence of the other. And we could define darkness, and if follow me on this one, okay, this line of thought. We could define darkness as the absence of light. Darkness is the absence of light, okay? In the same way, we could define hate as the absence of love. I want that to sink in for a little bit here. Hate is the absence of love, okay? We may have been defining hate a different way up until now, but I think John's putting together light, dark, love, hate. There's no middle ground. There's no fuzzy area. There's no gray area. It's love or hate. And hate is the absence of love. Okay? We're going to do like a middle school exercise here to get people's blood flowing. Can somebody like spell well and write neatly? Because I can't. Is there anybody who can spell well and write neatly here to write something on this? Come on, volunteers. Middle school, I'd have like 500 people raising their hand. Okay, you don't have to spell well. Just write neatly. Okay, you don't have to write neatly. Just write big. Okay, I'm going down here. All right. You can do it here or there or wherever. Here's a pen. What your job then, since you weren't brave enough to volunteer, is to answer this question, and Carmen's going to write down the answers. The question is, how do we show love to our friends and family? How do we show love? Practical demonstration of love. How do you do it? And I want you to think about it in two ways. Think about it when you're in their presence, how do you show them love? And when you're not in their presence, how do you show them love? Okay? Now, I know you can do this. You've had coffee. Think of those things. Shout them out in some sort of organized manner, and Carmen will write them down, and we'll have them as a list. Okay, say it. Say, I love you. Compliment. Wait, you have to slow down, though, because she's writing big. Compliment. We're making this list so that we can... Oh, I'm sorry. What? Spend time. I feel like the host of... What's that show? Anyway. Serve them. I didn't hear that one. Edify. Forgive. She's keeping up. Huh? Help. Any others? What? Hug them. Pray for them. When we run out of room, we'll stop. Smile. I like that one. Encourage. No, it's not that... Yeah, I like encourage. It's not quite the same as compliment, so... That's honest. It's on the list. What else? We got room for two more. Sacrifice. Okay. And we're out of room. So, oh, there's room for teach, I guess. It's not really straight across, but... Okay. We'll cut it off there. I'm sure you could think of them all day long, and you should. How are we going to do this? Let me see. Yeah, I don't want you don't want. Can we? Danny could hold that for us. But I did bring something that would help here. I'm thinking we can put it where we can see it. All right. I don't know if it'll stay. Oh, there we go. Okay. That's because I'm too close. So we got this list, which you can see. This is how we practically love people, okay? But we're talking about don't hate, so let's put that aside for just a second. Okay? Light and dark, love and hate. Hate is defined as the absence of love, not the opposite of love. Oftentimes we think that hate is the opposite of love, so that if I take something like encourage, I would say hating is to discourage someone. Or I would say that hating is to not forgive, or hating is to insult instead of compliment. But that's not what hating is. Hating is the absence of these things. So what's the absence of encouragement? Nothing. Nothing. What's the absence of compliment? Nothing. What's the absence of forgiving? Nothing. Indifference is hate. Indifference and not doing these things that are on our list is hate. That's not how we think of it. A lot of people, I was going to ask this question, how many of you would say that you hate people? And of course we would all say, well, no, I don't hate people. I mean, there's people that I'm irritated with from time to time. There's people that push my buttons. There's people that frustrate me. There's people that I'd rather not be with. But hate? Come on. Hate's too strong a word. It's not too strong a word. If you're not doing these things for people, you're hating them. It's kind of hard to swallow, isn't it? I didn't want to swallow it. But that's what John has set up here, a contrast between light and darkness where there's no gray area in between. Do you love people or do you hate them by not doing those things? As I started to think about those things this week, every person that I came in contact with, I was asking myself, do I love that person or not? And I have to look at a list like this and go, not. What can I do to love them? And I like the fact that Smile's on the list, because there are some people that you run into that you don't ever meet. You don't talk to them. You don't have any interaction with them. You can still love them by smiling at them. And I have trouble with that sometimes. I was on an elevator this week a lot. I was on the 9th floor. When you walk on an elevator, it's usually dead quiet unless two people know each other, because it's probably the most hostile environment there is. Okay? You walk in and people don't say anything. In fact, they breathe quieter when there's two people in there. Right? Why? I think because we're bent not to do these things. And so I shook up the paradigm a little bit and talked to people when they walked in. And it's a whole different world. I also found myself, and I'm just giving you examples because I think we need to change the way we live a little bit here. I was listening to a bunch of teachers, but it was a conference, so there's people giving speeches, okay? Some of them are terrible orators. Awful. The word I counted 300 times in a 15-minute talk from this person. And I'm thinking to myself, this guy's terrible. And then I look at my list and I go, okay, I don't even know the guy and I haven't even talked to him, but I've already insulted him. So I needed to change the way I think. And I actually stopped and prayed for him. Not just that his speech would improve, but also for his life. And in fact, I didn't even pray for his speech. That was just a joke. I prayed for his life because I was honestly going, wow, I am full of this thing that's called hate, and I didn't know it. So the first building block, the thing that seems obvious, we need to not hate, which means we need to be looking at that list and doing those things to everyone we come in contact with. Okay? Number one. Number two, and these will go quicker as we go, but number two is to love in action. If you look at the next verse, verse 10, the one who loves his brother abides in the light. Okay? The previous verse says the one that says he's in the light. This one says the one who loves. It doesn't say the one who says he loves. It just says loves. Now, I like that we have say I love you as our first thing, because it's important to do that, but not alone. We also need to act on that love. We can say it, like the hypocrites that John has been pulling out of the text. You can read about them in chapter 1, verse 6, 8, and 10, and in chapter 2, verses 4 and 9. They're all the same people. They say something and they do something different. We need to be doing what we say. We need to be loving in action. We need to be doing these things. And I want you to notice one other thing. It says, the one who loves his brother. Okay, and his brother refers to the family of Christ, the people here that everyone, not just blood brothers, but people that are in God's family. But we're not limited to loving those people. Okay, and I want to bring that out. John's talking to a specific group of people about a specific group of people. And so he's talking about loving your brothers. But I want to take you for just a moment, you can keep your finger here, and go back to Matthew 5. And I want to show you what Jesus had to say about the same thing. Again, Sermon on the Mount, you should read it this week. What did he have to say about the same thing? Matthew 5, 43. It says, "You have heard that it was said, 'You shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy.' But I say to you, love your enemy and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For He causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good and sends the rain on the righteous and the unrighteous." That just means God's not biased. He sends the good things, light and rain, to everyone. For if you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same thing? And if you greet only your brothers, what are you doing what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? Therefore, you are to be perfect as your Heavenly Father is perfect. So, and that's I think that that part of that perfection involves being perfect in love, which is what we've been talking about here. John is saying, love your brothers. Jesus is saying, yes, that's true, but in addition, love even the people that hate you. Do those things for the people that hate you. That's an action that you can take. Okay? So not only are we not supposed to hate, we are supposed to love in action, and not just some people, not just the ones that we would prefer, but all of them, everyone. Even people that you don't even really meet, you can still smile at and show that much love to. Okay? That's what builds this building. The third one, it's right here in verse 10. The one who loves his brother, we got that far, abides in the light. It's an interesting phrase. Abides often reminds us of the parable of the vine and the branches. We're supposed to abide in God. We're supposed to be connected to the vine so that we get all of our source of strength from Him. We've been going through Exodus in the last couple of weeks. And the lesson that the people of God had to learn, the Israelites, was depend on God. Right? They had to depend on God for food, for water, for clothes, for safety, for everything. And they didn't do a real good job of it all the time. They complained a lot. But what God was trying to teach them is utter dependence on Him for everything. Depend on God. And that's what it means to abide in the light. The word light, John also used in verse 5 of the first chapter, and he said, God is light. Okay? And that's what this is referring to. When it says abide in the light, it means depend wholly on God. And that's that third part, depend on God. So we're building this building, and we're doing it by not hating, by loving in action, and by depending on God. And I want to show you, because we're continuing to go through this book, that it doesn't just show up here. It shows up in a couple more spots. So if you flip over to chapter 4, verse 12, we'll see a connection here between abiding in God and having love be perfected in us. So let's look at that. Chapter 4, verse 12. No one has seen God at any time. If we love one another, God abides in us and His love is perfected in us. Go down to verse 16. We have come to know and have believed the love which God has for us. God is love, and the one who abides in love abides in God, and God abides in him. By this, love is perfected, so that we may have confidence. Love is perfected. Love is perfected when we abide in God. Okay, and in fact, that really goes back down to the foundation. Because loving God with all your strength, was dependence on God. And it's also the way to build the building, depending on God. So those are the three things that we need to work on to be able to do this. Now, there's a reward, right? There's a benefit here. And the benefit comes at the very end of that verse, verse 10. So we're back to 1 John 2:10. The one who loves his brother abides in the light, and there is no cause for stumbling in him. You abide in the light, you will then be able to love your brother, love everyone, and there'll be no cause for stumbling in him. Now, I said this is spiritual clear vision, okay? A person, when you walk around, this happens to me from time to time, I have to admit. When we walk around, we don't look at our feet to see that we're okay and that we're not going to step on something. We're usually all over the place looking at whatever's out there, and sometimes we trip, right? Because we're not looking at the right thing. How much harder is that when it's dark outside? Even if you did look, you wouldn't be able to see very well. And that's what causes us to trip. And that's in the physical world, okay? Blind people, they get around one of two ways. They either carry a cane that tells them that there's nothing in front of them so that they can walk that way, or they carry like a dog that does it for them, right? Because they know that they're blind, and they know that if they just were to walk out, they would fall if they didn't have the tools. What if there was a person who didn't know he was blind, but was? What would happen? How long would he be able to walk in some direction before he ran into something? Not very far, right? This verse is talking about people who are spiritually blind, and they don't know it. One of the really tragic things about spiritual blindness is that you don't know that you're blind. You think that you can see, and you continue to walk, and you fall. There's no cause for stumbling in the person who abides in God, because God's light lights up your path, and you can see, oh, there's some sin there, I'm going to step this way and keep going. There's a pitfall, I'm going to go this way and go around it, because I can see it. Hate makes us blind to those things. And I'll show you that in verse 11. But the one who hates his brother is in the darkness and walks in the darkness and does not know where he is going because the darkness has blinded his eyes. That's what happens if we don't fix the problem. We continue to walk in the way we've been walking in darkness. And the source of that is hate. And hate is the absence of those things. So we need to probably change the way we think about all the interactions we have with people. And there's a benefit to it that we'll be able to see much more clearly, and we won't fall, and we won't trip, and we won't stumble. But there's a downside if we don't do it. We'll continue to fall and trip and stumble, and we won't even know that we're doing it. So that this is what John has to bring to us. There's one example that I just want to bring to you of someone who I look at the interaction he had with Jesus, and I think, I wonder if he wasn't stumbling in the darkness and blind to the fact that he couldn't see. And that's the rich young ruler. A lot has been said about him. Is he a Christian? Is he not a Christian? Did he later sell his possessions? No one knows. But there's something interesting about the interaction Jesus had with him. He came and said, "What must I do to have eternal life?" And Jesus told him, "Follow the commandments," the same commandments we're talking about. And he said, "I followed him from the time I was young." And Jesus challenges that by saying, "If you want to be complete, go sell all that you have and give it to the poor." And I think he brings out these very two things out of that guy's life that he couldn't see. And that is, he didn't love the Lord his God with all his heart because he had a stockpile of money down here. And there was a great need in the people that he saw and knew. Maybe they weren't the people that were his friends, but he was hating by not providing for those needs, those people. So he was short on both counts. Follow the commands. And he said, "I did." And Christ with one word said, "No, I think you missed it." Was he blind? Could he not see it? And are we like that? Do we walk around not knowing that we're not doing what we should? The only saving grace there is that he walked away from that interaction grieved, which hopefully was the light of God shining on him, maybe for the first time, to say, this is what the commands mean. Are you going to do it or not? And he walked away grieved, going, maybe he went back and changed his mind and sold his stuff and fed the poor. We don't know. But it's interesting that he could think, I've kept all the commands. I've done all that I'm supposed to do without having done it at all. That's the tragedy of spiritual blindness. So the benefit of doing this, of doing these things, of not hating, of loving in action, and of depending on God, bring us to a spot where we won't be spiritually blind. We'll be able to see our way. So God's calling us to build this foundation of love for Him and make it go deep and make it go strong so that you can build a tall skyscraper on top of it, each room of which has someone that you love in it. Even if it's someone that you barely know, you should have a place for them to reside in this tower that you're building in your life. And if we do that, we'll be able to see clearly, and we'll be doing what God asked us to. So let's pray and see what we have time for. God, thank you for the truth of your word, that you put it here for us to read it, that you give us insight to be able to see it, that we have spiritual eyes and that we can see what you want us to do. I pray that you would also give us the power to do what you want us to do. It's easy to talk about how we're going to be loving towards people. It's not so easy to do from time to time. And so I pray that the foundation of our love for you would be the source of all the love that we have for other people. And I pray that we'd be able to practically see this in our lives this week, that we might make changes right now to go out there and love people. I pray this all in your name. Amen.